Today's daf in Masechet Kiddushin brought to you Meretz HaKodesh is daf Chof Chet, and we're still holding in the middle of Gilgal Shvuah, which we began last night, and we got up to Ad Heichan Gilgal Shvuah. It's about a third of the way down on Chof Chet Samen Al. Ad Heichan Gilgal Shvuah. So how far can you go with this Gilgal Shvuah? I mean, to talk about things that Bechlau, you never would have thought you could ever get to a situation where you would make an actual shvuah. And here, because of Gilgal, we can really go all the way. Well, Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, I'll tell you. Even if a guy says to someone, Yishav Alisha Ein Avdi Ata, swear that you are not my Eved Knani. What? Says the Gemara. If you don't have an actual raya, and you make a claim like that, you are put into cherem, so into nidui anyway. So how in the world could we say that you can make a Gilgal Shvuah? Because remember, what we're talking about over here is the type of Gilgal Shvuah where otherwise we would have said this is a frivolous claim. And that it's only because you have a serious claim in the court that they're going to make a Shvuah on anyway, so we can include things where we said it's even a suffix. But something like this to even raise is prohibited because it's damaging to the person ipso facto. You're putting down a Ben Yisrael. You're creating rumors that he isn't really a Jew and he's not allowed to marry. I mean, it's like unbelievable. You can't do that and say, okay, I'll include it in a Shvuah. We would put such a person into Nidui. The Tanya HaKorei L'Chavero Eved Yehei B'Nidui. And it's basically, as the Rishonim explained, it's Mina Keneged Mina. You want to put somebody down like that, that people will be mezalzel in him. So if you're in Nidui, so then you're in the same kind of position. Nobody's allowed to get near you and then go out with you and so on. Okay, so then you get exactly what you give. And if you call somebody a mamzer, and therefore you're claiming that his marriage itself is usher and so on, and that he's being over on a lav, so then, sofeget arbaim, you deserve to get arbaim. Why arbaim? It's very strange because obviously this is only midrabbanan, right? We never call malchus mardus arbaim. We call it malkinoto. Where do we get arbaim? So there's some actually bring a raya from here that malchus mardus is also arbaim, which is keneged what appears to be the pashtu many sugyas. And that the difference between the Diraisa and the Rabbanan would be how harshly we give the makas. But Lamaisa, the Achronim point out that in this case, since the whole idea is Mida Keneged Mida, so in other words, he is saying that this guy is being over on an Isser in his marriage, and that he's constantly being over on the Isser of Lo Yavo Mamzer. So for him, the Mida Keneged Mida is Bedavka Arboim, because he's saying that you're being over on a lot. So in this case, the Rabbanan made it tit for tat. But it doesn't mean that normally we would call a makas mardus arbaim. If he calls somebody a rasha, so then Besdin doesn't get involved. But this guy can be yoredi molachayav. I mean, he can mamish. In this case, having given you that type of bizyonis, you're allowed to go out and to even, see, there's big questions, and there's some of the Gainim that say you're allowed to, I don't know where they get this from, nobody knows, that you're allowed to burn Shlish Tvuasai, which is like, oh my God, this guy called you a Russia. Yoredi Malachayev means that since, here also it was a Mida Keneged Mida, in the sense that this is defamation to the extent that people are going to not want to have any, they don't want to do business with the Russia, they're chushed you. Who knows how you're going to cheat them and so on. So the Mida Keneged Mida would be, you know, okay, fine. So then you can do something that normally would be usher that would cause him to lose his parnasa. You can open up another store across the street selling the same things he's selling and so on and so forth. That's the normal approach. Although Rashi says, that not here, but Rashi says it's difficult for me to believe that, I mean, why is there a heter on an Isser D'Oraisa of being Noikem V'Noiter? Where would that heter come from? Just because he's vicious and calls you a Russia, does that means there's a heter to be Noikem? And it means there's a heter to be over on an Isser D'Oraisa of Asakas Gvul? I don't know where it comes from. So even though Rashi says there that Bichlal, there's an interesting approach to many of what appear to be stiras in Rashi, which I think is kedai to mention because it's such a universal issue. Rashi, in every particular sugya, gives you the pirish that he was mekabel from his rabbosai, unless he really is cholek, and then he'll say, lo shamati ken mi rabbosai, or he say, or mi rabbosai shamati, and I have problems with it, I have many problems. Whereas in other places where he makes a casual reference to something, there he talks about it the way he understands it, and he doesn't take the pirish of rabbotav on a particular case, he doesn't take that into consideration. And that makes it look like there's contradictions in Rashi, but it's very clear actually what's happening. Okay, anyway, so how could it be that we're talking about a case that we will have a shvua in terms of Gilgal shvua on what's essentially a frivolous claim in terms of your being able to bring it to court, and you should be able to use the I mean, it's unbelievable. You're using the stage that's given to you in Beis Din to do something that's b'chayev you need to. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It can't possibly mean that, says the Gemara. Hello, Amar Rava, you want to know what we're talking about over here as the ultimate reaches of Gilgal Shvua. It doesn't mean you're my Evet Kanani. It means, says Ravi Shavali Shalonim Katali Bevan Ivri, that you made a deal with me that I'm going to buy you, you're going to give me 6 years of work and so on. And that's what it means. So why is that the furthest reaches? Ad Heichan Gilgal Shvua. I mean, that's a normal issue of a financial claim, right? I mean, you say that he sold you a lien on his work. He's going to be doing your floors for the next 6 years. I understand why. Why is that ad heichan? That's a regular claim. I understand what you mean. Well, you know what? Because Rava holds that, remember, we had this tremendous Kiddush of Rava, who brought a riot before, that actually an Eved Ivri Gufo Kanui, remember the whole discussion that we had, that there's an element of Isser that's involved, because Vaharaya, in the sale of an Eved Ivri, he becomes Mutter for a Shivcha Knanit. So how's that possible if it's only Nogea Momenes? So obviously there's some kind of real Kinyan Aguf, which means that there's a getter of Karka here, like real Avonim. That's why it says Adhecha. Still, I understand. So then let's even say, so what are you going to tell me? That Eved Ivri would also have elements of Karka, and there you wouldn't be able to be Nishba. But that's the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that even Karka, right? Nechasim sheyesh lemachrayut are nizkokin by nechasim sheyesh lemachrayut. So then this is not an extension. This is the main point of the Mishnah. You're saying, Adhechan, where's the Adhechan? Well, I'll tell you why it's Adhechan. Because I would have thought in terms of the Mishnah, Ma'odetema, Karka hu davi inishtu bezavni betzina, that when people sell land, they don't like to make a fuss over it because they don't want people to hear about it. It's a big problem because people think, oh my gosh, this guy is really desperate for cash. He's selling off his things. It's going to wreck his credit rating. It's going to be all over the internet. He doesn't want anybody to know what's going on. We saw yesterday, wouldn't want the guy to have a shtar because it'll get around or because of other issues. So that I understand that by Karka. So we're telling me that Afa Piken is Niskaki. But when it comes to selling a person as an Eved, like, come on, I mean, that gets around. That's something, I mean, the guy's working for him, he's there all the time, and so on. That's something that Yeshlo Kala. So in this case, hi, Imitad is Avin, if in fact he really would have had that type of transaction with the guy. I mean, that's like really scandalous a little bit. You know, people talk about it. This guy was so desperate, he had to sell himself as an Evan and so on. So they're calling you slaves. You could have thought that because of that, it doesn't make sense. Nobody knows it. Then it seems to be really frivolous. I mean, you really think that nobody would have heard that there's such a mechira took place as an Evan Ivri and so on. Gamash wants to, because of this, Rava wants to tell me this is Ad Heichan. There's a very, just as a wrap up to the sugya, this is a very good place to bring out the shita of the Ritva, which is like an unbelievable shita, which you would have think that you would have thought you already know everything there is to know about this, you know, Nobody can utilize a claim of Eved Ivri Bizman Hazeh because we don't have Eved Ivri Bizman Hazeh, right? That's what you would assume. The Ritva says that you can make a sale like this even Bizman Hazeh. Okay, so fine, now there's enough communities, maybe it'll be Yisurim, only Bizman Shayoy Volnoyeg, whatever. But when I say this shita is a miyuchad shita, everybody talks about it. Like, what? There's so many gemaras that are mashma not like that. Why does he say that this? Because otherwise, you see, they have a problem. Because if you're telling me ad hechan gilgal shvua, according to Rava, so then it's hilchas ela mashicha. We have a general question. We don't talk about halachas that are only nogea yemos hamashiach. If we couldn't have this kind of transaction now, so, you know, so you can wait. Maybe you'll have Meshur Rabbeinu to talk to. What do we have to talk about this now? We're you know, we only have ourselves to talk to. Fine. Okay. Anyway, let us begin now our completely new sugya, an amazing, amazing new sugya, which ostensibly is coming to talk about chalifin. Now, the first thing we need to know is that there are two different elements of chalifin, as you know. One of them is real chalifin, and one of them is a formal chalifin, which we learn out from Megillas Rus. And that is Shalaf Ish et Na'alov and Atan L'Re'ehu. I mean, that's like, it's obviously not the real Kenyan. I'm not buying all of your fields by giving you my shoe and you giving my shoe back. I mean, but the point over there is that it's a formalized transaction. But Khalifin means Khalifin. Khalifin means barter. That's the literal meaning. We're going to barter one thing for the other. Now, the main type of transaction before Yaakov Avinu was Mechadesh Matbeya, is always bartering, right? Okay, so you bring in your thing, you're trying to figure out how much this is worth. I will give you so many boost pills. That's Gavi bait. I'll give you so many boost pills if you give me a copy of your safe, right? Fine. Of course, it used to be, you know, I'll give you so many beaver hides to make your Shtreimlach with, if you can. But okay, those were the original meaning of Khalifin. So there, it really is a straight out idea. It's a very clear idea. So you have two objects. So one guy has beaver hides, you know, and the other guy has some things that he's made as a carpenter. Okay, so the trapper comes in, he wants to buy a table for his home. All he's got is beaver hides. Okay, so he's going to give you a beaver hide per table, whatever it is, right? So that the moment that one of the people does the meshicha on what he's buying, the other person automatically is kona what he's buying, because it's a tit-for-tat kind of situation in which if I'm kona, you're kona. That's the whole meaning of barter. Now, when we develop this idea of isolating a concept called value, which can now, which is an incredible idea to be able to universalize an idea that is called value. And you see the unbelievable development over just a few thousand years of the concept of value, that it has become so abstract that nobody has the slightest idea of why money is worth anything. It's all a abstracted chalifin of my work for your work. I mean, that's basically what it is, you know. So I'm going to write a novel. You're going to pay me for the work of writing the novel with a value, which is only valuable because I can translate it into the new car that I wanted to buy. I mean, like, what does writing a book have to do with a new car? It's a brilliant idea, but it's completely abstract in a sense, right? So, I mean, this is the Shaila, whether we actually, this we'll be learning about Metzia, are we actually going to link value specifically to metal, like we talked about before, to a specific amount of silver? All of these kind of questions are questions, what do we actually mean? But we do know that there's a concept of a matbea, which is confusing, particularly in those days, because the matbea really was always something that had intrinsic value. It even was watered down with copper. I mean, there was a certain amount of silver. Until recently, the same thing was true even in the United States, where coins had a certain amount of metallic value. And that would give them some kind of, instead of abstracted value, there's a value that's defined by the stamp that's put on the matbea. That's called tsurata de matbea. And that's an abstraction to value, so that it doesn't really matter necessarily whether it equals the full value or not. And what's more, it's a big problem, because since it's the tsurata of the matbea that gives it its over le socher value, its universal value, so it needs that government approval, so to speak. So therefore, It's a something that cannot even be used for barter because it isn't intrinsically valuable at all. Suppose the government decides to cancel all of the old coins that have the old, you know, that have Putin's figure on it. This is after they kill Putin. So now they don't want the things with Putin. Okay, so then now you can't use those coins. So how are you going to have something that you're going to use as exchange when it doesn't have any value? So listen, here's the fascinating thing. So in the Gemara, where we learn out the idea of chalipin from Rut, shalaf ish nalo, and this is kol davar, it's a machlokas, whether it's only nalo or whether it's kol davar, right? And that's a machlokas we're going to get to in a moment, whether you dafka need to use a nal or something. This is a question. What kind of things are kosher to make the formal kinyan sudr? We call it sudr because we use a handkerchief. Okay, but in any event, the question is, if you're going to be doing a chalifin, can you use a coin? Because since the coin does not necessarily have any intrinsic value, and the focus is on the tsura, as we said, the tsura could be canceled tonight by the government deciding they don't, this kind of coin is no longer, the banks will no longer accept. So that's a question, because the whole idea is fascinating, because it's like full circle. So the idea of chalifin was initially that it's object for object. But we are nisham, and we do a shuma, so there's an appraisal of the object. We appraise out this concept of whether it's a fair exchange, right? So that gave rise to this concept of value. Then we universalized value in terms of matbeya. But now the question is, the matbeya has become so abstract, can you even use a matbeya to switch for value, because a matbeya doesn't really have any value? It's like amazing, right? And whatever the value is, your mind is on this abstracted meaning of the matbeya, that it has this stamp on it that says it has X and X value. Okay. In the end, you should know that we, la halacha, we paskin, you cannot use a coin for value. Wow. Okay, that's really an amazing, amazing story of the evolutionary history of money in the Torah. But in any event, so the question that we have over here is, this Mishnah seems to be saying that you can use coins for value, which would be a contradiction to the way the sugya comes out elsewhere. So let's take a look at the Mishnah, because what it seems to be saying is, instead of talking about a real fair exchange, it talks about an abstracted or formal exchange. And then when it says, and I'll give you an example, it gives the wrong example. And it gives an example of an actual exchange, of a real barter. Now, how do you confuse the issue of true barter with the na'al, so to speak, barter, which is kinyan sudr? They're both called, it's true, chalifin, but you can't use an example of the wrong one to illustrate what you're trying to say. And therefore, the Mishnah is another brilliant construct by Rebbe to totally confuse us and to force us to deal with the various issues and to see in what sense we're using money as money, or money as a value, or money even not suitable for value. So let's take a look at this Mishnah.
After Richard's introduction and after Rebbe drinks.
Must be the voices coming down from the heaven in the world before Rosh Hashanah. It's yes. Amazing to be zeichet to Nevi'as.
Oh my Richie gosh. And drinking.
Right here in the Daf Yomi.
I deserve the Helek of Mishnah.
And Doc was right on top of you. And Zoom has done a good job, and so have you. And everybody thinks that I'm crazy. I want to know the explanation of this sentient Zoom. That's what I want to know. Nobody's got any idea. Even Reb Danny, with all of his AI expertise, can't figure this one out. All righty. But that hypodermic aimed at Richie's head has a very salutary effect, Doc. Keep it up. Kol hanased amim ba'achar. So Rashi learns this means anything which is a universal value for anything else, which could only mean money, right? So that's what the Mishnah seems to be saying. So anything that can be used as the value for any other object, so that's the universal idea of abstracting value into money. Kivan shezachazeh, so when one side of a transaction has taken possession, nidchayev zeh b'chalifah, the other one immediately becomes the shomer, so to speak. He's responsible for whatever it was exchanged for. Now, this is ridiculous. I mean, if we're really talking about money, then the halacha is not like that. Then we just said, you cannot be kone metaltalim with money. I mean, we said it's a machlokas, whether that's a deoraisa, like Rish Lakish holds, right? And it's beferish. He learns that from the pasuk, nemiyada mitecha, that you can only be kone with mashicha, or whether it's a drabbanon, according to Rabbi Yochanan, as we discussed, and the basis of the drabbanon is that we're afraid that if you make a transaction just by paying for it, and you haven't taken possession, then the other guy is going to feel that he doesn't have any responsibility for it, and he'll come and tell you there was a warehouse fire, and you don't get anything. And so in order to avoid that, so we said that you need to be moshech in order for the cash to complete the transaction. Now, but here it's saying, halacha lemaisa, that if somebody takes your money, so then the other person becomes the shomer. He's this meaning that it's basically his at this point. If anything goes wrong, it's my responsibility. I wasn't moshech, but he was moshech the money. Now that can't be true because the Mishnah just said it's not true. So therefore, what does the Mishnah seem to be saying? It seems to be saying that if you give a coin, it would be a tremendous chiddush. If instead of giving a coin as a purchase for money, you give the coin as an exchange for barter, all right? So here you are, and I mean, imagine a situation, obviously, where somebody has no idea what a coin is. So you've come and you've greeted the Indians, and you're going to buy Manhattan for this pretty coin. Okay, so then obviously that's chalipin, right? But in a case where two people who are aware of the meaning of a transaction of kesef, they make a deal. And they say, listen, kesef is not kinyan, so we don't want to do a kinyan with kesef. What I want to do is exchange the value in this coin for your shor, let's say. And then the moment you take the coin, it's not going to be a kinyan kesef. It's going to be a kinyan of chalifin. You take the value, I get the shor. What do you say? So then they have specified that they don't want to engage in a kinyan of kesef. They want to engage in a kinyan of chalifin, and they're using the kesef as the handkerchief, so to speak. Very convenient, because at the same time, you get the money that the value was, so the guy's happy to do it. So it's basically a formalization of a chalifin in their mind, right? Seems to be saying over here, that's perfectly okay. But then when the Mishnah says, so let me explain what I mean, ketzad, it gives totally the wrong example. It says, okay, Tzad, well, if you want to change a shor for a para, right? So, or you want to change a chamor for a shor. That's not what you were talking about. I thought you were talking about using a batbeya. And now you flip to, sorry, now you flip to a classic exchange, to a real barter. Something's wrong with the Mishnah. It should have said, Kate said, Hichlif Matbea Bishar. I mean, this doesn't make any sense. So if you're doing a classic exchange, you're doing a barter. So Kivan Shizacha Zenit Chayav Zebe Chalifav. If one side takes the, one guy takes the Shar, or the other guy takes the Chamar, that automatically seals the deal. And now the other item is in the other person's Rishus 100%, and it's not like a monetary exchange. Okay, so I understand this part of the Mishnah. Kivan shezach hazeh, nitchayev zeh b'chalifav. Nitchayev means, if anything happens to it, it's my loss. It's the pshat. So he is now basically dealing with his own thing. But it belonged to the other guy a minute ago, and the guy's a million miles away. Doesn't matter. It's now yours completely, because it was a barter. So I understand. What are we using here for chalifin? Can you please explain it to me? Since I'm a chalifin, mind you, where's the chalifin? We're talking about a chalifin with a madbeya. I mean, that's what you said. You said, kol hanishom ba'acher, right? So the Mishnah seems to be saying that what? Against all of the other shitas that we spoke about in so many different places where we come out in the sugya in Bava Metzia that a matbeya is not meant to be used for chalifin because the idea is that it's only because it has the tsurasa on the matbeya. And that's a complete abstraction. Omer v'yadachikom. That doesn't mean that. It's a little bit of a misfortune or unfortunate twist in a word. It doesn't mean that anything which is nasa domim, it means kol hanisham domim ba'achar. Anything that in order to be able to use it for a bartering transaction, you would have to take it to an expert to get an assigned value to it, right? So somebody says, okay, let's do a barter, shor for chamor. Guy says, well, I don't know. I have no idea what your shor is worth. I mean, I think I know what my chamor is worth. And the other guy said, well, so let's just take it to an animal dealer and he'll give us like an eyeball figure, and then we can do the barter. So that would mean nisham. So you need to be nisham dami ba'achar. That's what it means. So it means anything but a matbeya. Actually, that's what the Mishnah is saying, because the matbeya is the one thing that is defined in its value and therefore will never be nisham ba'achar. So the word misled you into the opposite conclusion. So kimon shezachazen it chayev the other words b'chalifin. And that's because this is classic chalifin daikanami. I mean, listen, read the Mishnah for God's sake. Diktani ketzad. Man, how do you read the Mishnah? How could you think that the Mishnah was referring to a matbeya if it gives you an example of something that's a classic barter? It said ketzad. Yichliv shor b'chamor, chamor b'shor. I mean, did it say anything about a matbeya? What's the matter with you? So shma mina, that of course the Mishnah's not coming to tell me that you can use a matbeya, but it's coming to tell me a big chiddush. The big fetish being that anything at all, which is metatalin, can be used for chalifin. Now, the truth is that that's a big machlokas, because we have the sheet that it says that since it says nal, it means dafka nal, and it has to be a kli, it can't be a living animal, or it can't be a peres, whatever. So the Mishnah is coming to tell me that is not true. You could use anything. Okay. But what did you think? Like, you started with, what is the meaning of kolanasa dami ba'achar? You said the meaning must be matbeya. I understand. Did you not read the rest of the Mishnah? You only read the first line of the Mishnah, and then you come up with the question, oh my gosh, what about the sugya that says you can't use a coin? And then somebody's intelligent enough to read the next line of the Mishnah and says, no, oh, wait a minute, don't jump to conclusions. I mean, wouldn't it be a good idea to read the Mishnah first? What did you think? When you asked me that question, that what? That the Mishnah implies matbeya is usable for chalifin. Did you not read the Mishnah before? How did you understand the word, quote, ketzad? My ketzad. You're giving me the wrong ketzad. I mean, you should have immediately understood that it doesn't mean what you claim it means. No, I'll tell you. There is an approach. The approach would be like this. I could learn that the idea would have been that you could use basically a chiddush to tell me two different things. At first, the Mishnah starts talking about matbeya, and then it moves on to tell me another chiddush, and that is even peirot. So there's two chiddushim. First of all, you can use a matbeya. And I want to tell you, you can even go so far as to say ketzad to use the Torah. So, but that would only be true according to the Man Yoma, who holds that peirot make chalipin, okay? Peirot don't mean literally fruit, but it means anything that these consumables that are similar, and they're not real kelim like a na'al is. So if you go like Rav Sheshes, who holds that, yes, peirot are abdi chalifin, so then you could learn. I mean, I see now that it's wrong. Agreed. But you're asking me, what was I thinking? That this is what I was thinking. I was thinking that the Mishnah is this two-step chiddush, starts off with talking about matbeya, goes on pretending to illustrate while actually expanding. Not only is the chiddush of you can use matbeya, you can use kalim. Fine. But that's only true according to Rav Sheshes, who holds that you can use kalim. According to Rav Nachman, like, what would have been the havim, over here? He holds peres lo avdi chalifin. So what was the meaning of the Mishnah? Would have been a steer to Reb Nachman and a steer to the whole sugya. So is there an approach that you can tell me to justify what appears to be a nonsensical first read of the Mishnah? Yes, I can tell you an amazing thing. But if I tell you this amazing thing, what I'm doing is wiping out the entire approach to the Mishnah. You know what I thought? I'll tell you. I thought that the Mishnah was not talking about chalifet. What? Yeah. I thought the Mishnah was talking about money. What could you think the Mishnah is talking about money? It says, if you flip a chamor for a shor, I mean, well, how did you think? No, I thought it was saying like this. I thought it was saying an amazing kiddush. That it's possible to have a Kenyan Kesev that works like chalifet, which would be fantastic kiddush. So, for instance, let's assume a case like this. Somebody is machlif the value of the money that's owed for a shor for a pora, or the value of money that I owe you for buying your donkey for a shor. So then that would be a transaction that is entirely kesev, and yet it would work like chalipin. How would that be? Very simple. Listen, a guy sells his shor to someone. The person was moshech the shor, and he says, okay, so now I owe you $500 for the shor. So now the seller says to the guy, hold on a second, you know, I'm actually in the market for a cow. Maybe one of those like really vicious cows, a gavi cow. So how much, if you have a cow, how much would that cow cost? So the guy says, all right, I actually happen to have a cow like that, and it's worth $500. Oh, I'll tell you what, says the guy. You owe me $500. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to buy your cow with those $500. At that moment, it would be the equivalent of a barter, and you would actually be kena the cow without mashicha. And that's what we're saying. There is such a thing as money that works like chalifet. Why would that be true? I'll tell you why. Because remember, if you hold like Rabbi Yochanan, so we'd have to assume that the time of the Mishnah was going like Rabbi Yochanan. So remember, what did Rabbi Yochanan hold? He held that midiraisa ma'ot or konot. And the whole idea that you need Mashicha is because we have this gezeira, matam omru Mashicha kona, gezeira shema yomru. We're worried that the guy who was selling, there's a fire that breaks out. The other person hasn't been moshech. The guy who's selling says, well, it's not my stuff. I don't have to like bother, you know, staying up all night fighting this fire. It's his problem. So he'll say to the guy, nisufuchitecha ba'aliyah. Fine. So it's all a takana derabbanan. Now, remember that we have a general rule that the takanot derabbanan are only said on a milta d'shchicha. Milta d'shchicha gozu ba'rabbanan. I'm assuming that Gavi has written this down before, but if not, it's an important thing to remember to write down. Milta d'shchicha gozu ba'rabbanan. This type of thing is not shchicha. That somebody should ex post facto. In other words, you already did the deal, and now the guy owes you money, and now you're going to say, okay, let's use that money to purchase the cow. That is not something that we need to cover with the Nisufuchitecha Ba'aliyah thing, because when does such a thing happen? You know, one out of every 10,000 transactions, we don't make takanas for that. So Milsid, lo shchicha, lo gozu b'rabbanan, comes along the Mishnah to preserve all of that information. That Aliba de Rabbi Yochanan, you need to take all this into consideration, and there will be, therefore, sometimes transactions that essentially duplicate chalifin, even though they're being used by kesev. Now, this serves to really sharpen the concepts in your mind. So it's a very valuable Mishnah, but it's no longer talking really about chalif. Okay, it's all very nice as a possibility, but I mean, it's only if you hold of Rabbi Yochanan. I mean, how's Reish Lakish going to deal with this? Reish Lakish yields Mashicha, that's Midiraisa. It's Beforish in the Torah, Kine Miyad Amitecha, Dovah Nikta Miyad Layad. Remember, it brings bringing it towards you. That's the Mashicha. So according to him, you can't use kesev, even midiraisa. So the Mishnah, you can't tell me that the Mishnah is coming to tell me this. I mean, wild pshat that you've got, that it's not even referring to chalifet. It's really talking about a din of mammon and so on. So Reish Lakish wouldn't have any way to really understand why we would have assumed that we're talking about cash over here. Now, I mean, yes, he could if he holds like Reb Sheshes. I mean, so if he holds like Reb Sheshes, that you can do chalifin with peres. So then he could say the pshat that we originally said. The reason that the Mishnah appears to be talking about money, even though it says ketzad, where it's talking about ichlif shor bepara and so on, that's because it's going like Reb Sheshes. So if Reish Lakish holds like that, you can actually use the chiddush of the Mishnah to tell me that peres can do a chalifin. So then he'll say that. The tirets like Reb Sheshes. But what happens if he holds like Reb Nachman, that Peirot cannot do chalifin, and then it can't be referring to Madbeya, because we know Madbeya doesn't do chalifin. That's the whole point that we come out with. So how does he explain the Mishnah? I mean, you can't say if he holds like Reb Nachman, we don't have any approach. The opening of the Mishnah seems to talk about Madbeya. The Ketzat seems to talk about Peres, and that's Deicha everything. I mean, it doesn't work out according to any approach. So what does the Mishnah mean? Al karcha, Reb Sheshes, severely, 100% right. The only way that he would explain it, that would make any sense, is to say that it is going dafka according to Reb Sheshes, and he'll understand the Mishnah like Reb Sheshes. In other words, anything which is nishom, meaning even peres, that's the chiddush of the Mishnah, even peres can be used. And then that would say, Ketzad, this is an example of Peres. By the way, there's a question of whether we would actually call Shor v'chamor to be Peres, which is the way Rashi understands it. Tosis understands we're talking about the meat of the Shor for a chamor. So it's exchanging steaks, not a Shor. That we call Peres, but an actual Shor is more similar to a Kli because it's an instrument that you use. It's like a tractor. So we understand a tractor is essentially a kli. Anyway, so we've had an amazing day, but we're not even sure what made it amazing. Did we get to the bottom of chalifin, or were we talking about something else entirely, an ersatz chalifin that was actually being done by kesef? But meanwhile, we've gotten chock full of all of the shitas for Bav Metzia. So we now know, first of all, we reviewed the machlokas of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish about the question of whether Moos or Kunas at least midiraisa, which enabled us, according to Rabbi Yochanan at least, to actually broaden the envelope of transactions utilizing kesev, even though that kesev is similar to chalifin. We got some lovely insights into the history of the development of barter to monetary systems and all the way back again, in which now the money can't be used for barter, which is very ironic. And then we've also come to recognize the differences in the machlokas of also from Bav Metzia between Reb Nachman and Reb Sheshes about the status of peres, whether naal means literally naal, and things that are similar to a naal, or whether even things that would be called peres would be included. And so we've got much further than we were before this morning, you have to admit, even if you can't be 100% sure about what the Mishnah means. But Rebbe would be very happy. Ha ha ha. I confuse these guys marvelously. Okay, then. So, Bezrat Hashem, have a wonderful day full of Shia Hashem es Hamecho, Varechis Nachalasecha, Umolet Levavenu Laav de Chabaleva of Shalem. Bezrat Hashem, in time for Rosh Hashanah and for a wonderful din, which will close the year in all of its horrors and open up the year in all of its brachot. Kol Tov, everybody.